Greetings, everybody, from the frosty ice capades of New Hampshire. We bring you the Friday filibuster. Well, I guess I do. I don't know. Mac, it's probably pretty snowy down where you are. And Eric, you were saying that you kind of dodged the weather system, correct? This is Friday filibuster weather, by the way. So.
Oh, yeah. Did it. Yeah, we pretty much live right on the outskirts of every major storm that's happened so far. So, you know, we've got a solid 2 or 3 inches out there right now. So. It gets pretty hairy.
Yeah, sounds it. so here we are. We'll kill some time for your weekend. It is I'm David Johnson and Eric Ashley, like you just heard from, and Mac McIntyre.
Hello.
And well, let's just get right into it, guys. Maybe those 3 inches of snow have been just too much to bear, Eric. So what have you been consuming your entertainment life with?
Well, I realize it's been like a month since we've done like
a regular filibuster
where we've talked about stuff. So I've actually watched a lot of stuff. So I'm not going to cover most of it. I don't know. For a long time, you know, I would maybe watch something, maybe watch a movie or more likely a TV show. But pretty much from Christmas on, I've been, digesting a steady stream of Netflix instant watch stuff. Or I got Alien Anthology for Christmas. So I watched through all of those. That was fun. But lately, somehow I ended up on this serial killer bender where I've just sort of been consumed by serial killer related media. I didn't mean to. It just kind of happened that way. And I really need to kind of get out of it and get on to something, you know, happier. Like, you know, I don't know what's happier than serial killer. Pretty much anything is happier than serial killer.
Yo, Gabba Gabba.
Well, that's the other extreme. I'm afraid it's kind of like if you don't eat for a long time, you don't want to have a big meal. Because then, you know, your body can't handle it. So I probably should hold off on the Yo Gabba Gabba,
right.
Work my way up to it.
Fraggle Rock.
I don't know, maybe some light genocide, something just to kind of get me up there. But anyway, so I as I talked to you, Dave, since we recorded last, I actually watched both seasons 3 and 4 of Dexter, finally got around to those.
Cool.
And really, really enjoyed them. Probably give the slight nod to season 3. Only because I guess at the end I felt like it was a more satisfying season overall. Although that may just be because the very end of season 4 rubbed me the wrong way. I know we talked a little bit about Dave, and it wasn't so much what happened as much as sort of the pacing, and I know it seemed like a little bit of a letdown. But the rest of the season was just, I mean, that I'd have to think back on the past seasons, but before that, but I think there are more like episode ending twists in the 4th season than in any season previous.
Right.
It's like just a ton, like every, like just major, major things happen at the end of episodes.
And as much as I liked, as much as I really liked John Lithgow in that series, I do give the edge to Jimmy Smits in season 3, who I just thought was on fire. I thought it was great.
Yeah, and he was good because he was a little bit more of an unknown quantity throughout most of the season.
Right.
Whereas John Lithgow, you knew what you're getting, you know, as far as who he was and what he was doing from the get-go. I've been enjoying that. And also just finished reading a nonfiction book called The Murder Room, which is about something called the VDOC Society. I think that's how you say it. But it's a real-life society, just this kind of informal gathering of some of the world's best police force, criminologists, forensics people. And they have to be invited to join the society. But they meet once a month. To have a meal together and to solve cold cases.
Oh,
it's really fascinating. And so, so this book is kind of it's about the 3 founding members, and then about some of the cases that they've solved. And it's really a fascinating read. So if you like that kind of thing, I definitely recommend it. And then I thanks to Netflix Instant Watch, I saw the Red Riding trilogy. Have either of you seen that or familiar with it?
Heard about it. Don't know much about it, though.
I've been curious about that. I've wondered what that's about and if that's any good.
It is. It is good. It's based on a series of novels. I don't remember the author's name. But it basically takes place in the north of England, in the Yorkshire area, kind of from 1974 to 1983. Each of the 3 movies is named after a year. So the first one's 1974, second one 1980, third one 1983. And they're all kind of loosely... take place in the shadow of the Yorkshire Ripper serial killer, serial killings, and it's really about police corruption and just it is bleak gritty stuff. And it makes Dexter look like Yo Gabba Gabba,
huh.
not so much in like the gore, even though there's a good amount of that, but just the really kind of soul sucking, depressing stuff that people go through once you kind of find out, you know, the kind of stuff that goes on and just the depths of the corruption. It's kind of.
So are you in a dark place in your life? Have you been shopping at Hot Topic, perhaps?
I haven't. I've kind of been clawing my way back to the surface, kind of up through the grave. But no, the Red Riding Trilogy is really good. I mean, it's you know, it was made for the BBC. So, you know, they actually aired on TV, although it's nothing that would ever in a million years air on American television. But really, really fascinating stuff. Really, you know, really gritty police, you know, drama stuff. Like I say, with this kind of serial killer bent. Great characters, great actors in it too. Andrew Garfield is in the first one. Sean Bean shows up in several places throughout the series. A bunch of other great British character actors. So it's on Netflix. Instant watch. I do recommend it. Just don't go in expecting a happy, fun time. And you may also want to make sure that you have a good grasp of British accents, because they get pretty thick in places, but definitely have enjoyed that. So yeah, I do need to kind of get to a happier, go luckier place in my life. Hopefully starting soon. Hopefully with this podcast will be my turnaround point. I'm hoping.
All right, good.
Well, make me laugh, boys. Make me laugh.
All right, Mac, it's on you then. Bring the sunshine.
Oh, really? Cause I was just about to go on about my whole, Jack the Ripper obsession.
Good.
That'll be another time. I have a whole list of stuff here to talk about. So what do you want to talk about? Do you want to talk about Tron? Do you want to talk about New Year's?
Let's hear Tron. I want to hear your take on that. I haven't seen it yet.
You know, I look up the movie, you know, the new Tron Legacy. I look it up on the internet and all the fans are saying, oh, it sucked. It sucked so much. But you know what? I really liked it. I was really blown away. I think it's not like the perfect movie, but I think it did a lot of things right that I really enjoyed and that I really got into. You know, it follows, story-wise, it kind of follows a very similar tact of the original Tron. You know, guy gets sucked in the computer world, he plays the video games, escapes from that, and ends up, you know, fighting with the revolution. It's kind of, you know, there's that familiarity to it. But it introduces some really intriguing ideas along the way that really kind of made me sit up and take notice and was like, you know, whoa, they're really going into some, you know, some far-out, unusual places with this. So, you know, that really intrigued me, and also just because, you know, this movie has just been on my mind a lot since I've seen it. You know, the original Tron was really a watershed moment in special effects. You know, you look back at it these days, and it looks kind of really clunky and kind of, shall we say, basic.
Yeah, I just can't get over the big hats. I mean, I can appreciate the you know, the vintage effects, but those big hats they were wearing was a little too much.
It all comes down to bicycle helmets for you,
man. Yeah, the helmets ruined it. Yeah, the giant helmets.
But with this new one, you know, I'm thinking that we kind of have a similar watershed moment with special effects, because what's the one thing that people keep saying that CGI cannot do? They say, you cannot do a human. Cannot do a human face. It's the one thing that CGI will never do. But the people who made this new Tron Legacy, God bless them, they actually went out and tried it. And that's where we got, you know, you've seen all the ads that the young Jeff Bridges shows up in the movie. And is it a seamless effect? No, he looks a little bit off. He doesn't look quite human. But man, I think these guys deserve a round of applause for actually trying and making a really solid attempt at the one thing that everyone says can't be done. You know? So I wonder if like 20 years from now, people will look back on Tron Legacy and be like, oh, this is where, you know, that was the big breakthrough in creating a CGI human. So
I'm just afraid that they're just kind of giving George Lucas the green light. You know, they shouldn't encourage him. And yeah. You know, so I'm just afraid that that's where we're going next, but I'm glad that, so was it at all, convincing? I mean, was it, I've heard kind of mixed things about, I mean, not just the movie, although I've heard a lot of people like it too, but yeah. The whole Jeff Bridges effect.
The Jeff Bridges effect, I wouldn't say convincing, but within the context of the movie, I'd say it works.
I mean, I guess it's kind of, you're already kind of in the computer world, right?
Exactly. So
it's not like it has to look, you know, gritty and realistic or whatever.
Exactly. So I'd say within context it works. You know, it's that character, by the way, is named Clue, and the Clue character, you know, it's face is a little stiff, his movements are a little stiff, but again, you know, when you look at it in context, it really works, and it's a nice contrast between the, you know, actual Jeff Bridges, who's, you know, he plays Flynn, is very kind of laid back, and is very, he makes a joke about how I've got this whole Zen master thing going on, and so, you know, he's, Flynn is very, you know, laid back, and he's very naturalistic, and he's very, very humanistic, whereas Clue is very cold, and very machine-like, and very stiff, and rigid, and so there's a nice contrast between the two of them. So, yeah, I'd say, you know, context is everything, especially with a far-out craziness like Tron. Also, light cycles, so that you've got those, too.
Very good. So then thumbs up, yes?
Mustn't forget the light cycles.
Definitely thumbs up?
I'd say so, yeah.
Very good.
I really enjoyed it. And like I said, it's one of those movies that I saw it, and now I can't stop thinking about it.
Wow. All right. I was swimming up. Swimming up the current, Mr. Mac McIntyre. Very good. Anything else?
Let's see. Well, I don't know. Do you care about my big New Year's experience?
Oh, I do now. I mean,
that's right. It's big. As long as it's big.
It was big. I was in Times Square on New Year's Eve. I saw the ball drop.
Nice.
Yeah. Were you wearing one of those Nivea hats or whatever they were?
I did not get one of the free giant blue hats, no.
Did you pee your pants? Because is that what people do? They wet themselves there instead of going to find bathrooms?
The no bathrooms thing was pretty tough. That's the thing about New Year's in Times Square is that seeing the actual moment when it happens and the ball drops and everyone shouts Happy New Year, that was really amazing. It was absolutely amazing. The 12 hours of standing in one spot with no food and no bathrooms, that was somewhat less amazing. That was... It's like an endurance test, you know.
Well, you can say you did it, though, you know? You did
exactly,
it.
Exactly, yeah. It's like what Daniel Foster Wallace says. It's a fun thing I'll never do again.
All right.
So what happens? I mean, what happens, like, immediately the moment after the ball drops, everyone cheers, kisses, do whatever they do. I mean, then you just, like, everyone to bolt for the highway? What happens? Like, I would want to get out of there as quickly as possible.
Yeah, you know, everyone shout Happy New Year. I didn't get the memo that everyone was supposed to bring their own confetti. I didn't know that part. Everyone started throwing their own bags of confetti around.
That's a rookie mistake right there.
Yeah, and you know, I didn't have any to throw, so that was bad. But, yeah, so there's that initial big wave of excitement that kind of goes all over the crowd. And then, of course, they have the first wedding of the new year right there on the stage. And but by that point, yeah, everyone starts dispersing. But you're all packed in so tightly. You know, you've got people right in front of you, right behind you. You've got people's shoulders pressing up against your shoulders. So it takes a little while for people to properly disperse. You know? And everyone's in sections along all the streets in these giant metal pens that the NYPD herds you into. So it's like we had to like find the way out of our pen. But I actually cheated. I just climbed over the metal pen and got out that way. Ooh, and
fugitive Mac McIntyre making a run for it in the big city.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. Nice. But from there, you know, everyone just kind of dispersed on the streets, and the mood was very festive. People blowing the noisemakers and people yelling and partying and stuff. So that was fun. And the New York City hot dog vendors, the street hot dog guys, they were out in full force. Those dudes were everywhere serving up the hot dogs.
And did you partake?
I did because it had been 12 hours with no food or water.
Right.
They jack up the new price.
That's right.
Everything costs $20.11.
It did, but it was very welcome. So yeah, it was you know the disbursement from out of Times Square. It was kind of low key, but it worked. People were cool with each other. So I didn't see any fighting, didn't see any violence, nothing ugly happening, which was good. So yeah, I'd say it's definitely worth it. Tough, but worth it.
Right off the bucket list for that one, right?
I'd say so, yeah.
All right, let's see. For me, I'll just talk about a couple TV shows that I've tuned into recently. One is, and Mac, I'm wondering if you had seen this, Bob's Burgers.
Oh, yeah, I saw the pilot, yeah.
From Lauren Bouchard, the guys who did Home Movies, right?
Right.
We missed the pilot, but we saw the second one. I thought it was pretty funny. That was okay. Definitely has a kind of a vibe going, the Home Movies vibe, but I liked it. You?
Yeah.
Not so much?
No, the probably it was kind of a mixed bag. There were a lot of funny bits, but a lot of bits where I felt they were kind of trying too hard.
Oh, yeah.
There's definitely room to grow, so I hope the network gives it a chance.
We'll see. Yeah, it should. It's nestled in all the animation, so who knows? It's not like it's a Mitch Hurwitz show or anything. because I'm a big fan of the FX original programming, I tuned into Lights Out, the new show, the boxing show.
Okay.
Yeah, caught the first episode, liked it, so I'll probably stick with it. Again, I'm pretty much an FX fanboy now, so whatever they cough up, I'll tune into. And I've finished Sons of Anarchy season one, so get the second season coming. I Justified starting up again, so a lot of stuff coming. In fact, I have a Justified preview coming up for TV Verdict soon. I got to look at the first three episodes of season two. So one of my favorite shows of last year is looking pretty good in its comeback. So, but that's it. I haven't really. Tron was on my possible list, but I was deterred by some of the word of mouth. But Mac, you may have reinvigorated my interest in the film. So we shall see. But that is about, I'm sure there's a lot more because Eric, you're right. It's been an epoch since we've talked. The Friday filibuster, but can't think of anything right now.
Do we want to quickly touch on the Ricky Gervais controversy at the Golden Globes, or is that?
Yeah, what do you think? I'm glad he. As far as if the little celebrities got their feelings hurt, who cares? I think my stance on award shows.
I think it's true.
Although I am more interested in the fact that Ricky Gervais will be guest starring on The Office next week.
Yeah, I heard that. It was supposed to be a secret, I guess, but it got leaked early.
David Brent.
He originated the original Office.
Absolutely. So he will be David Brent. Hopefully, it'll be good. All right, let's take a look at stuff. Again, tons of stuff, I'm sure, but anything jump out that you guys have been working on for the site, Eric?
Speaking of Ricky Gervais, a couple of weeks ago, I reviewed the first season of the Ricky Gervais Show, which is basically the first season of his podcast from like 2005. I took the audio, kind of recut it, and then added a layer of sort of animation, like kind of a Hanna-Barbera style animation. It aired on HBO last year, so they did 12 episodes, and the new season is just about to start up. I'd heard the original podcast, and it's hilarious stuff, and I really enjoyed that first season as well. The animation, I think, added a little bit of a new layer to it. But kind of the star of the show is the actual content of the podcast, so that was fun. And then this week I am reviewing Secretariat.
Yes, that's right.
Which is the horse movie.
The other horse movie.
The other horse movie. Oh, is the other horse movie Seabiscuit?
That would be my guess.
Yeah. And this is it's an interesting. It's very it's a Disney movie, and it feels like it. It's very kind of Disney-fied. They're trying to kind of play up aspects that, you know, maybe don't deserve playing up, just to kind of make it a little more dramatic. People tend to have conversations with each other that are just, you know, chock full of personal revelations and quote-worthy things that no one ever says to each other in real life, you know, about running for the future and all this kind of weird stuff. But the actual horse racing scenes are really thrilling. It's a really good story. I mean, it's one of those kind of period piece, sports underdog type things. It's a solid family movie. So it's worth a watch. It's just not, you know, not up to the level of some of the best of that genre. So
does Secretariat ever ring a doorbell and then happy music starts playing and everybody starts dancing?
When does that happen? What movie does that happen?
See, for our listeners who watch Craig Ferguson, what I just said was hilarious.
Okay. All right. We will take your word for it. How was the jock? How were the jockeys in the movie, Eric? Because I know you know a decent amount about jockeys.
I'm a bit of a jockeysaur.
You are a jockeysaur.
Solid, short, right. You know, that kind of thing. You know, basically, you know, good jockeys. John Malkovich is in it, too, as the horse trainer.
Gotcha.
He's supposed to be French-Canadian. The only reason you can tell he's French Canadian is because he occasionally speaks French. Otherwise, he just sounds like John Malkovich. But he's cool. So,
all right, Mac.
Did Didn't the Jakasaur go extinct during the Cretaceous period?
A long time ago. Yeah, very, very, very short dinosaur.
I think that's a Roger Corman movie.
This Saturday on Sci-Fi. Okay, for me, well, you knew this was coming. It's the first volume of the new Ben 10 series, Ben 10.
You know, I didn't know it was coming, yet I did still, you know? I did it, I didn't.
Yes, Ben 10 Ultimate Alien. So it's not a complete reboot, but it's just kind of taking the story in a new direction with some new elements. You know, the creators are doing some interesting things with this new series. The idea of having Ben's secret identity revealed to the world and making him famous, it's not really working for me, but we'll see where they go with it. Some of the other stuff, though, the new villain Agrigor is a really awesome villain, and a lot of these first episodes are about the fugitives who escaped from Agrigor, and each week Ben and his friends are encountering one of the fugitives, so it's kind of, they get to have like a monster of the week formula and build up the overall story arc at the same time. It's pretty clever and ingenious, so still looking forward, they're still enjoying the Ben 10, and looking forward to the next volume after this is when things get really crazy on the show, and they do some really far-out episodes, so that's going to be fun.
What does your Ben 10 collection look like now?
Let's see. That's 4 volumes of the original series.
Uh-huh.
With, 9 volumes of Alien Force.
Okay.
2 live-action movies. And I believe there are 4 video games, but I only own 2 of them.
Do you have any figurines and collectibles?
Yeah, but not as many as you'd expect. I have a Humongousaur, I have Alien X, I have Upgrade, and I have the new guy Nanomech. So.
All right. Well, it's I think you need to aim for some kind of Guinness Book World Record. You know, there's got to be something out there. Now, if you could, who could you meet involved with a show that you could have some? You know, like you could have an autograph. I mean, who would? Is there like a showrunner? Is there someone who created the character that you could get their autograph and make your day?
The showrunner is so-called, quote, man of action, unquote, which is like 4 guys who work in both TV and comics. I don't know, Steven Seagal, not to be confused with the movie actor.
So Steven Seagal.
Yeah, Steven T. Seagal is one of the guys who does it.
You know, that'd be a thrill if you saw him at a convention and they autographed your Humongousaur.
It could be, but he's done a lot of comics and stuff too that I like. I know voice actor D. Bradley Baker does like a couple hundred voices on the show. He's like almost all the aliens. So it'd be pretty cool to meet him and have him do some of the voices.
Very good. Excellent. You could like record them and then maybe you can have him record the intro of the Friday Filibuster.
That'd be sweet.
I'm
just say Humongousaur. Yeah,
right there. That'd be excellent. All right, let's see. Well, for me, this should be coming out soon, but it bears mention. It's Airwolf Season 4 has finally arrived on DVD.
Wow.
The last time Airwolf Season 3 was years ago. I mean, they were releasing 1, 2, and 3. Like, they had the 3 seasons released within a year and a half or so. They were making good time, and then they just stopped. So finally, Season 4 shows up, and it's not difficult to discern why it took so long, because it might be one of the worst seasons of television ever made.
Was this the season in which we had the model helicopter?
This was the season where like the funding dropped out, like the floor dropped out as far as the budget went. USA took it over or something, so they produced it, had no money, shot it all on videotape, jettisoned all the actors. So Jan Michael Vincent played Stringfellow Hawk. He's in the first episode, and then they just kind of write him out once he reunites with his brother, Sinjin, who they retrieved from Vietnam. They couldn't even afford a cameo of Ernest Borgnine. They hired a double to walk with his back to the camera into the helicopter, which promptly exploded. And then it just goes straight downhill from there. Yeah, they reuse old Airwolf footage from the other shows, and if they ever need something new, like I've seen just awful, awful proto-CGI Airwolf helicopters use, and it is beyond awful. So, Yeah, so I'm looking forward to diving into that. So that'd be great.
You know, when characters leave TV shows, not enough of them blow up.
That's true.
You know, when Valerie Harper left Valerie and became the Hogan family, I think she just like died off screen. She didn't blow up in a helicopter.
Yeah, that would have been something. That would. In the whole first episode of the Hogan family, they're trying to like Carlos the Jackal, who was responsible for that assassination. Yeah, so Airwolf season 4. 24 episodes of this garbage they managed to poop out, which is amazing. We'll see what happens. Okay, Mac, what do we got next?
Next, why don't we take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. And you folks listening can play along at home. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the upcoming DVD releases tab, and from there we're going to go to the cover art gallery for January 25th. And just talk about what's on the list here that's interests and excites or frightens us. There's another one of those weeks where we're seeing a lot of like reissues of previously existing discs, but that's all good.
How about Captain Jano? A story of trust, love, and understanding.
It's like some kid found his grandfather's army hat and just stuck it on. Oh, someday I'm going to be a captain, too.
Zero description for this movie, so who knows what you're getting into here.
I don't know, Captain. I don't want to step on anyone's, sleazy-sounding DVD release, but Captain Jano might be a good one.
Captain Jano.
It was a documentary about our, in New York State, our illustrious ex-governor, Elliot Spitzer.
That's right. That's Klein 9.
Which I've actually heard good things about.
Then current pundit, I believe.
Oh yeah, he's doing all right.
For he's him. Doing all right. That's right. He really bounced back, that kid. There's an animated film the Dead Space aftermath that's coming out before Dead Space 2, a game I'm looking forward to. And they had done this before with the first Dead Space, a game which I really liked, and I reviewed that, and that was okay. That animated film, but. We'll see about this one. The studio tends to do this a lot with their game releases. They did Dante's Inferno, and they did an animated film as well. It's kind of an interesting take, though the movies themselves aren't fantastic. But
now, do they use like the same like game engines from the cutscenes?
No, it's a straight up. It's like a traditional 2D animated thing. So it's not like CGI or anything. At least I don't know. At least the other ones I've reviewed aren't. So. Now, and is this Elektra? I have to say that Jennifer Garner doesn't look as sexy as she usually does.
Dave, I think that's the opera.
Oh, Elektra. Thanks. All right. Mm-hmm.
Could still have ninjas in it. We don't know.
Might. His product list is full of operas and erotica.
Operas and erotica, yes.
Friday Filibuster brought to you by Operas and Erotica. Oh, we got. Did you guys ever watch The Flash?
I remember watching that. Yes.
Yeah.
I remember really liking that. It probably does not hold up at all, but
I would doubt it. Yeah, I would doubt.
You got the complete series on here.
Yeah, I actually that's a reissue. I actually have that box set.
And what is it? Does it hold up under repeat viewing?
It's kind of yes and no. It's kind of aged in some ways, but it's still kind of campy fun. So I had fun watching it. It's another one that, like, kind of like Airwolf, you could tell kind of where during the course of the series that the funding sort of dropped.
He's no longer a blur. He's just walking really, really fast.
Right, stuff like that, yeah.
They just sped up the tape so it looks like Benny Hill.
How about Puppets Who Kill?
Oh, cool.
How about Puppets?
Right next to the Princess and the Pony. Princess and the Pony. a lot of randomness here.
I guess for big Hollywood releases, we have Red with Bruce Willis and Morgan Freeman.
No, that's true. Yes, that's...
Never got out to saw that one, but I wanted to see it. I enjoyed the graphic novel it's based on.
And there's a final Saw movie, and there's Secretariat right underneath it.
In between the two, Scott Cole, Disco Dojo. I think you have to have a strong core muscles to be able to hold up that head of hair. It's got to weigh you down.
All right. Well, okay. What do you guys say? Most inadvertently sleazy sounding DVD release of the week, Eric.
Enter the Void.
That's good. Well, here's a serial killer movie, by the way, Eric.
I know. I saw that. I didn't want to say anything
about
it.
Right next to Invictus. Yes.
I'm trying to, you know, work my way out, Dave. I'm recovering. Let's not drag me down.
All right, Mac, what do you got?
Let's see. Inadvertently sleazy sounding. I'm going to go with Inside the Milky Way.
That's better than mine.
I guess I'll go with a layup. House of Bones.
That's good. That was on my list.
All right.
You sound disgusted with yourself, Dave.
I don't know. It was an easy one, I suppose. But what are you gonna do, right?
Well, you could have done Princess and the Pony. I mean, there are a lot of ponies.
Yeah. That's true. All right. Well, let's go on to our ambush topics, where we've just got random topics we'll throw at each other and see if we can weave podcast gold. Mac, why don't you kick us off?
Okay. Well, the internet is currently reeling with the fact that Anne Hathaway has been cast in the next Batman movie.
That's true, yes.
So that's a good excuse as any for us to play another round of Batman Versus. So I've picked out a fictional character here for Batman to fight, and we're going to see who wins in the fight between Batman and MacGyver.
Well, I guess neither one can kill. So.
That's right.
So at least we're on level playing field this time, right?
It would fight to the knockout and or arrest, I suppose.
fight to the life lesson.
See, I'm more interested in their sidekicks facing off. You know,
oh, really?
Pete Thornton versus Lucius Fox or Robin. How about Robin versus Pete Thornton? You know, I mean,
is he the glaucoma guy?
Yeah, so he's got Pete's got glaucoma.
What about
Robin's a former trapeze artist.
What about Jack? Is that the guy's name?
Yeah, Jack Burt. Right, Jack Burt.
I mean. I think he's more on like the Robin level.
That's
I'd
true.
Say Pete, Lucian Fox, sure.
So then, yeah, actually, Pete would be Alfred. I would say, right? Pete and Alfred.
Oh, there you go.
Match.
I don't know. I mean, Alfred have did was Alfred Bruce Wayne's boss?
Well, I mean, to say it's difficult to classify Pete as MacGyver's boss. I mean, he was never really like. You know, like, I don't know, was he ever disciplining him or anything?
No, I mean, I'll be honest, Dave. I watched the show tons when I was a kid, but it's been a long time. I have very hazy recollections of what actually happened.
As far as I know, like, MacGyver was directly connected and directly responsible for, like, blowing up Pete many, many times and just caused severe physical injury, and he never once was written up for it, so. I'm not sure. But yeah, Jack Burton and Robin is a good matchup for sure. How about villains? How about Murdoch?
Murdoch versus the Joker?
Versus the Joker, yeah. That's a pretty good.
That could be interesting. Well, they're both like masterminds.
And Murdoch does not die. He's immortal. So
So basically, you just completely derailed Mac's topic.
I did.
No, that's fine.
So I don't know who would win then. Okay. I mean, then we already established they would fight to the life lesson?
Right.
Right. So I guess I have to say draw. Although, well, I don't know.
Really?
Let's see.
I mean, I guess I guess you'd have to say Batman if it came down to breast.
Maybe. I don't know. That MacGyver is pretty resourceful.
All I see MacGyver, whenever he punches someone, he always falls down after he punches someone. You know? I mean, yes, he can make a tomato soup pressure washer out of a vacuum cleaner. And he has done that before. I don't know if that's enough.
See, that's what I was thinking is Batman has all his gadgets at the ready, whereas MacGyver has to use his resourcefulness and build his gadgets on the spot.
Yeah, I'd say a Batman, I mean, he's locked into a certain set of, you know, very impressive gadgets, whereas MacGyver has the flexibility to build whatever he wants.
Oh.
So he could end up with a more powerful doodad or gadget.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, well, I guess we'll just have to – we'll call it a draw. They're both beloved characters.
Okay.
So, all right. Very well, here's mine for you guys. Since it's icy and cold and whatnot, action scenes that take place on the ice or on ice.
Okay. There's a pretty good one in the movie King Arthur.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah, or there's a huge battle between two, you know, sword wielding armies on a giant frozen lake, and you can pretty much guess how it goes.
Yeah, it's a lot of cracking ice and
a lot of cracking,
a lot of CGI ice breaking.
Yes, and then you know,
CGI ice,
dramatically timed ice breaking.
Yes.
But a pretty cool scene, actually.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. That's a movie I think I liked okay. I might want to revisit it sometime. I don't think I had an awful problem with it.
I'm just trying to find the name of the movie. Apparently, there's a famous scene in a silent movie directed by D.W. Griffith. I guess it's apparently called Way Down East. But they where Lillian Gish is on an ice floe that's breaking off, and the hero has to jump from ice floe to get her. And they think they actually had to shoot it that way. It wasn't like special effects. That right. was actually really, really dangerous. So,
wow, way to class up this conversation.
Yeah,
because the best I had going was Batman and Robin when they the awful scene in the museum. Remember?
Right, with the ice skates.
Yeah, they click their feet together and the ice skates pop out. Shockingly bad, shockingly, unbelievably bad. Man, what a bad movie. What a bad movie. All right. Eric, deliver us from this wasteland.
All right. Scary pigs.
Oof. Okay, here we go. So a movie came my way called The Butcher, and it's this Korean torture horror movie. And I've seen a lot of awful stuff, but this was too much for me, so I really had to watch a lot of it in fast forward, to tell you the truth. So, yeah, I'll fess up right now. But the main torturer was a guy who walked around with a pig's head on his, you know, wearing a pig's head, and just engaging in all manner of horrible torture porn. So, one of the few movies that was too hot to handle,
wow,
too cold to hold.
Wasn't that the killer in Motel Hell with that rocket?
Oh, maybe. That's true, right. I actually remember that DVD cover as you mentioned it.
I'm guessing. I only saw it once, but for mine, I'll go with Miyazaki's Spirited Away. There's that really messed up scene with a little girl's parents transform into pigs.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's nightmare fuel right there.
Yeah. That is bad stuff. Well, this is the final piece in my serial killer media extravaganza.
Yes.
I finally got around to seeing Hannibal.
Right. Yeah, that's right. The pigs.
Yeah,
I read the book, and I remember pigs played a lot in it.
Yeah, there's like these killer pigs or boars or whatever. They train to feast on human flesh. And there's some rather disgusting sequences of them carrying out their endeavors. Not a terrible movie, actually. Not any. Actually, a pretty good movie. Maybe it doesn't hold up to the original, but it definitely felt like a novel, like it was adapted from a novel. And it's directed by Ridley Scott and co-written by David Mamet and Hans Zimmer did the score. I mean, it's not like no slouches involved in this movie. So
yes, those I do recall those pigs being fairly scary. Now I got a quick honorable mention as we're talking about pig transformations. How about the pig transformations in Willow? Those are pretty.
Oh, of course.
Those are pretty hardcore. So,
they traumatize you as a child.
They did. They did traumatize. It took the love and pure joy of Babe to wipe that away.
Babe's scary how cute he is.
That's true. That'd be a nice little mashup for someone creative to do. A little mashup between the Willow pig transformation scene and then the joyous scenes in Babe. You know?
I don't know. Maybe
Barbara Hoggett's leading those pigs into the dog show or the cheaper contest, you know?
I know. It sounds like maybe they should mash up Babe with the Butcher.
Oh. No, enough. We're not going to talk about the Butcher. You're done. The Butcher.
Okay.
Okay, well, that is it. Thank you for tuning into this edition of the Friday Filibuster. We appreciate your patronage. As always, feel free to purchase any of the DVDs you heard us talking about here and support DVD Verdict. Friday Filibuster at DVDverdict.com is our email, and Facebook.com/FridayFilibuster is our Facebook page. Thank you to Eric and Mac. Mac, take it away.
Sloth Love Chunk.